So my story is a little bit different in the sense that our program is diabetes focused, and so this is a fitness and nutrition program. And really, the story originated in one African American church, and we've been able to translate and update the program to reach now Hispanic churches in our community. So I have no relationships to disclose. So today, basically, I'm gonna cover 4 points, give you some context about our community, talk to you about our organization, the Institute for Family Health and the Bronx Health Reach Coalition, and also really talk about the history of our program and how it was developed, implemented, and evaluated, what we have learned, and the next steps going forward. So our story takes place in the Southwest Bronx. It's a poor urban community in New York, where 95% of the residents are either Latinos or African American, and suffer disproportionately from a number of chronic disease, diabetes, HIV, asthma, cardiovascular disease. We also have the highest rates of obesity in New York City. 27% of the South Bronx residents are obese, compared to 25% of the Bronx and 21% of New York City residents. So the Institute for Family Health is a network of federally qualified health centers that provide primary care to medically underserved communities in New York. We have health centers in the Bronx, in New York City, and also upstate New York. And in 1999, they received funding from the CDC to start the Bronx Health Reach Coalition. And basically, the coalition is a consortium of 70 organizations, not 700 organizations, 70, and that works together to eliminate racial and ethnic health disparities in diabetes outcomes. And the coalition has represented from different organizations in the community, including faith institutions. And we use the socio-ecological model to create change in our community, basically doing interventions at the individual, community, and also system-wide level. And we also use the community-based participatory approach to engage our community residents in every stage of our different interventions. So from the beginning, as part of this initial community action plan, the coalition really agreed that working with the faith institutions in the community was key to promote any change in the community and really promote healthy lifestyles in the community. So in 2001, they initiated a faith-based initiative, and which now includes 47 faith institutions. It's Christian-based. We have all kinds of denominations, from Protestant churches to Catholic churches, non-denominational churches. And the congregation ranges from 50 to 2,500 members. In each church, the pastors had made a commitment to deliver health messages from the pulpit, and also assign a person in their congregation as the health coordinator, who is responsible to coordinating monthly health activities in the church. And that those health coordinators also become representatives of the churches in the coalition. They meet with me on a monthly basis and all the REACH staff, and we provide them with technical assistance and trainings to coordinate a variety of health activities, and also advocate for policy change in healthcare access. That's one of the other components of our faith-based initiative. And the evaluation of the initiative is done, again, with the community-based participatory approach. So we have a research committee that oversees and guides the evaluation of the initiative. And we also have our academic partners in the coalition, which is the New York Academy of Medicine, who are basically the evaluators and basically meet with us and our committee to discuss evaluation approaches. And you'll see how that plays out in our program. So this is really the topic of our presentation today. It's Fine Fit and Fabulous. It's one of the most successful programs that we have in our program. And it's a really cute story. The initiative started about It was in 2004, and it was this group of women in this African-American church who wanted to lose weight and were interested in learning how to eat healthy, but also gain spiritual balance at the same time. And one of the health coordinators from that church had a background in nutrition and food management, partnered with us to really start, launch this ministry, and they call it the Fine, Fit, and Fabulous Ministry. And what happened was that over a year, they started engaging in all these different activities, and other coalition leaders saw the promising, impact of this ministry, and they said, we need to package this somehow in some book that we can then offer to other churches in our network. And basically for a year and almost 2 years, our nutritionists and the women of this ministry collaborated to translate all the activities from this ministry into a curriculum. Then the curriculum was sort of offered and pilot tested to other African American churches. And then after 4 years of sort of developing the curriculum, sort of getting, adapting and adding things to the program, we had a final product, and it was a 12-week program that basically included 1 hour of nutrition and 1 hour of fitness, and it was taught by a fitness instructor. Then once we sort of had the product in English, our Spanish-speaking churches were like, well, we want to be part of Fine, Fit, and Fabulous. So we worked with them for almost 2 years to, sort of adapting and translating the curriculum and making it appropriate, not just linguistically, but culturally to the Hispanic communities that are involved in our initiative. So here are some of the key concepts of the program we talk about. It's really basic nutrition knowledge, and the concept is that really things that people can use on their daily basis, nothing too complicated, but really some concepts that people could use around, healthy eating, so judging portion size and learning how to, distribute your food better, learning what are healthy foods and beverages. And that's really basically what the program, sort of talks about in terms of nutrition education. The program is also defined as being goal oriented and support based, and basically all the participants in the program are asked to set some health goals at the beginning, and we also use the peer system, the buddy system, where basically we partner them with one of the other participants in the program so they can sort of collaborate together and work towards, achieving those health goals. And it's heavily grounded on spiritual context. This is really important to us. One of the things that we heard initially from our coalition is that if you wanted to implement a health program and be successful, you really needed to speak the language that was being spoken in this congregation. So we use spiritual tenets and throughout, or scriptures throughout our education materials, to emphasize different health messages and concepts that are describing the program. All the lessons starts with a prayer, and they end with a prayer. All the activities take place in the church, and this quote is one of my favorite quotes in the program, and they really emphasize the whole concept that your body is the temple of God and you should take care of it. So he says, do you not know that your bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, who you have received from God? You're not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. And these messages are sort of like, they're really resonate with people in the church. And we're able to basically motivate a lot of them using this type of messaging in our program. And that's Lois Godfrey, the lady by where the cross is actually the health coordinator who created or had the sort of the initial idea of starting the health ministry at her church, the Fine, Fit, and Fabulous ministry. Okay, so this is a program that we started in 2004. So we had a lot of years of running this program. In total, we have about 24 churches that have done about close to 30 cycles of the program. The one thing that I forgot to mention is that the program is 12 weeks, so it's about 3 months. And this, the data that I'm presenting today refers to 11 churches that did the program in the last 2 years. And basically, the participants that I'm talking about are participants that not only completed the program, but also completed some surveys that we started administering 2 years ago. So at the beginning and at the end of the program. So we're only talking about 127 participants of over 600 participants that we had over the years sort of participating in the program. And so that's the distribution of the churches. We have 4 African-American churches, 5 Latino churches, and 1 West African church from various denominations. We have Pentecostal, Baptist, we have 1 Catholic church, and a number of them were non-denominational, as well as 1 evangelical. And in our process, we use a community-based participatory approach. So we involve the facilitators and the fitness instructor in collecting the data. So all the data was collected by the facilitators, and the way the facilitators collected the surveys, and the fitness instructors collected the weight data for our program. The data was analyzed using SAS. Here's some of the statistical analysis that we use. So frequency distributions and mean values were generated to describe the sample with respect to demographics, health status, and church attendance. Differences in characteristics by race and ethnicity were examined using chi-square tests, and also we use a student test for continued variables. Changes in participants' knowledge and behaviors were examined using the McNamara's test. So this is the characteristics or the demographics of our sample. 58 of the participants self-reported as Black, and many of them were African Americans and Caribbeans, and as well as a small portion of them were West African, specifically from Ghana. There is a big Ghana community now in the South Bronx. The 69 of the participants self-identify as Latinos, and mostly they were Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. The majority of the group were women, and between the ages of 45 and 64. A big part of the sample had attended college, and then the remaining part did not finish high school, so we had a really interesting mix of level of education in our sample. Close to half of them were working full time, and then the remaining were either retired or not working at that point. And we had a sample that of people who attended a lot, many times within 1 week to the church, and that's something that we haven't carefully analyzed yet in our data, but it's really interesting to see. These were people who went to the church several times per week. And then half of the sample were at high risk of developing diabetes, and we determined that by the American Diabetes Association risk test. It's those real sort of those questions that ask, you know, what your age is, and ask you also about your family history of diabetes. So we were able to use those questions to determine to assess the risk of developing diabetes. A quarter of the sample were diagnosed with diabetes at that point. So here are some of the significant changes that we found at the end of the program. Regarding to knowledge in nutrition, people show significant improvement in knowing what food and drinks were healthy and judging food portion size. A lot of them reported physical activity. So many of the women started joining walking clubs, and some of them reporting attending fitness classes in other venues. Regarding dietary behavior, I highlighted in red some of the key ones, but basically the participants reported eating more fruits daily, drinking plenty of water, reading labels. This is really key, not so much... Let me rephrase that. It's really key specifically in the Hispanic community, because we found that our Hispanic community, the concept of reading labels, full labels, is fairly new to them. So we were really impressed to see that the program was having such an impact on them. And also, most of them reported eating less fast food. Another interesting thing of the program is that we were able to reduce tobacco and alcohol consumption. One of the explanations for that is that even though the program is around nutrition and physical activity, we do make the correlation between overeating and other forms of addictions. So throughout this process of engaging in a healthy lifestyle, I think many of the women also started, you know, actually thinking about what are the things they were, what other sorts of additions they had. So that's one of the interesting findings. In this sample, an average woman lost 4 pounds of their weight by the end of the program and about 2% of their body weight. Again, if we include the data from the other programs, these numbers actually tend to rise. But they're still very significant. Some of the institutional changes that happened after the program ended were that many of the participants found new ways to, you know, sort of continue the physical activity. So they continue hiring the fitness instructor and dividing the cost among themselves. Some of the churches actually bought fitness equipment. They also, some of them went as far as actually creating a faith-based boot camp, which I'm still very impressed by. And many of them actually started walking club. Regarding the healthy food, healthy eating in the church, many of them basically created policies to not serve swim beverages in the church or, you know, frying less food, and also having weekly reminders from the pulpit. So sometimes either it was the pastor giving them or the health coordinator, you know, allowing the health coordinator on a weekly basis to come up to the pulpit and say something about, remind people about healthy eating. Another thing that happened was that some of the churches started growing their own food and supporting and raising awareness about farmers markets and green cards in the community. So some of the lessons learned, pastor engagement or leadership engagement is really key. In our experience, the programs that we didn't have or lacked leadership involvement from the beginning of the program sort of signaled that the program was not a priority in the church. So that often led to a lot of problems in recruitment and finding space or scheduling sessions. In one church, the program was perceived as a utility expense, so the church wouldn't turn on the lights for us or the heat, so that's a problem, especially if you're in New York during the winter. So very important. That was a very important lesson to involve the pastors in the program. And again, the whole concept of tying in spiritual messages to health messages is really key. Also, you know, as far as sustaining our program, what we heard from our members was that sort of coordinating the program was a lot for one person, and even for the pastors, they were really busy. So now what we're doing with them is helping them create a health ministry involving other members from different or other leaders from the church in actually promoting health messages and, you know, sustaining the physical activity in the church and the active living, and that has been really successful. Using CVPR to evaluate faith-based initiative works, but we encounter a number of problems when, you know, involving our community residents and collecting data. We lost a lot of data because some of our community residents lost participant consent forms, or they didn't make copies, or they distributed the wrong survey. So one of the things that we did was midway through the process, we actually did a presentation to them and basically presented with the data they had collected at that point, and they were so disturbed to see that the data was not doing justice to all the changes that they were witnessing. So that kind of motivated them to be like, okay, we need to be more strict about how we collect this data and more serious about this component of our project. And we were able to fix that, you know, and really have much better data by the end of the program. Sustainability or scalability, we have a toolkit, and we have heard from other groups in other states that have done the program. One of the funny stories that we have is we were contacted once by a gospel gym in California who actually had a class called Fine, Fit, and Fabulous, and it was modeled after our program. And the program has been actually adapted for cancer projects and non-faith-based settings as well. Next steps, we have, we're now using the toolkit to disseminate the program to larger associations in New York and New Jersey and Virginia. And we're now being approached by other groups to adapt the program for other religions and make a more male-oriented program, since we want to engage more men in our churches in the program. So I have a shameless plug at the end of my presentation. If you want to learn more about the program, you can. We actually wrote a chapter for this book, which is actually going to be available next year. And the book is really about obesity interventions that shown effectiveness in their community, but also have evidence of being replicated elsewhere with a similar effects. And it's really interesting because they not only talk about the African American community or the Latino community, they also have stories from Native Americans and Pacific Islanders. It's really, really interesting. It's not just on faith-based initiatives. It's really talking about the best practices regarding obesity interventions in the U.S. So tell your friends about it, put it on your wish list on Amazon, read it, it's going to change your life. So, and if you want to know more about the table of contents, I have some copies here. Our U.S. Surgeon General actually wrote the preface for the book, so be looking out. It's going to be available next year. And last, I want to acknowledge our funders, the CDC, the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities, the New York State Department of Health, who have funded different stages of the project throughout the years. And most importantly, our members, right? They're the true authors of this project, and we wouldn't be able to tell the story without their participation and support in our program. Okay? Thank you.